Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Red Men Weekly podcast. Hope you're all doing well. Yeah, we bring you on the show the best clips from our Red Men Plus content. Just to let you all know, as I always do on this show, if you want these shows in their entirety, either in video or indeed in podcast form, simply head on over to redmenplus.com. And if you sign up as a yearly club captain and use the code weekly, W-E-E-K-L-Y, you'll save yourself 20% on that deal as well. So rather than paying 50 quid for the year, you'll only pay 40. So 40 quid for an entire year's content, which is an absolute bargain. We're giving it away. I mean, it's less than a quid a week. Absolute crazy we're doing that. But we are, because we love you guys and we want to share the love of Liverpool around the globe with you. Right then, how do you share the love about Liverpool? It usually comes when Liverpool have won a game of footy. An away game as well, a rarity for the Reds, but that's exactly what they did when they beat Leeds on Monday night at Elland Road. Thankfully, the day after, we had Steve Plunkett, we had Jamie Cranford, and we had Sam Walker in to discuss that game. So yeah, here's a clip from this week's Final Word show.
A much maligned player in our team, and quite often rightly so, for languid football, for lazy football at times, for a lack of defensive positioning, which wasn't in the team for, and Sam raises his eyes to heaven, and I get that. I've long told rival fans that at the start of the season, Trent's remit for Jurgen Klopp was to go and challenge Kevin De Bruyne for assists, not Aaron Wan-Bissaka for slide challenges. There's the difference.
Yeah.
The rest of the world needs to get onto that. Klopp's actually said it in an interview himself, that's why he's in the team. If we concede goals there, you let me worry about that. Mm. We don't dig Trent out for it. Manchester City recently put John Stones into an inverted defensive midfield position to sit alongside Rodri, and it's worked, paid dividends for them. John Stones is an accomplished centre-back who can use a ball well in terms of giving it simple, the right pass at the right time to set things off. In doing the same with Trent, and I'm going to go big on this one, this guy uses a football like no one else.
No one else?
Right, no one else. Ridiculous, the skill set the guy's got. First-time passes, the range of passing, the awareness. He really showed up last night. Every time that we had the ball, he was in positions to receive the ball all the time. Mm. Popped it off and often took a little knock for doing it. That was a totally different Trent in that position last night, because he had the freedom to run the game. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I thought Trent controlled that game last night for Liverpool for an hour. He was controlling the game. This could be a tactical nuance that Klopp incorporates that makes Trent the best in the world at that position. We've talked about him being the best in the world from right back because of his creative side of his game, not necessarily the defensive side of his game. This is totally different, because it's been referenced that Konate will cover the space behind him. Depending on who we recruit in the summer to play in midfield, if it's another three, then a good bit of communication sees someone do what Henderson did, which is go and sit in the space that's been vacated. Yeah. Trent was absolutely magnificent last night. I watch him use a ball. We sit here and we wax lyrical about Thiago's on the ball skills. Thiago will play three or four passes in the game, which you sit there and you scratch your head and go, who's that to? Because he overhits one by 50 yards. He forces his passes into feet. With Trent, it was it's an absolutely natural position for him. His awareness of his teammates around him. Sam, he's got every single pass in the locker. There isn't anything he can't do. He can hit the long balls out wide to Robertson, which we've seen time and time again. He can play the outside of the right boot first time is down the line to Salah. We've seen that. Jota away at Arsenal in the League Cup. That was a very similar pass to the one last night into Nunes. Got everything in his locker, mate. I'm really excited about this.
Listen, and also I think what
I want to talk a little bit about his position, because I think this has been a long time coming. I'll explain why in a minute. But in terms of the goals, I mentioned before about the old Liverpool. The Nunes goal last night and the Nunes goal at Newcastle is the new Liverpool. It's Trent tucking into a space and clipping the ball over the last line of defence to an ongoing running striker. Nobody's been able to really do that before. Well, listen, the odd time you might have seen Henderson, Thiago do it, but in reality, that's an elite ball and it's got to be weighted perfectly, which means we don't really try it because it's vertical as well. It's not with a bit of angle on it. It's a straight ball curled in. So I think that's the kind of goal that you might see more of in the future, which I think is amazing. In terms of Trent, we this has been the plan, I think, all season. I think that, I know we talked about John Stones and all that, but the difference with John Stones doing it now is that City haven't got a right back and it's been something they've had to develop to. John Stones is playing right back here in the season without doing that. We tried it at the beginning of the season, but we weren't able to do it properly because Konate wasn't fit and Henderson wasn't fit for a while. So although Trent was tucking in, he was having to tuck in further up the pitch. He wasn't able to tuck in immediately because we didn't have Konate. Then Gomez isn't in the form and Matip can't do it. So I think this is something Klopp's been trying to do for a while, but because this season's been absolutely chaotic, we've got no injuries to senior players now, none. Bacetic and Ramsey are senior players, as much as we appreciate them, or especially Bacetic. I think we've been trying to do this for a while, and I think now we're seeing the fruits of it. Was it Southgate tried them centre mid once? It was just away at somewhere crap. But I think I totally agree with you. I think Trent's got every pass in the book, and I think this could be Liverpool beyond Thiago. Or if we haven't got Thiago in the side, we're not lacking that creativity because you've got Trent in there. I mean, God knows what they both could do if they're both in form for a while. But I think that's where we might move to. If Thiago isn't going to be a starting player expected to start every game next year when he's fit, is that having Trent in there might replicate what Thiago does, but with a bit more flexibility. And you can still have three more midfielders who can do different roles.
I agree. You're totally right. And what Trent is really good at, if you go and spend the time looking at the stats, Trent's an interceptor. He's always been a great interceptor. He leads the stats on interceptions. He's in the top three or four in European football for interceptions. That's his game. He's in a great position to do that. Really interesting, Jamie, that Sam mentioned Stefan Bacetic in his summary there. That would be a player that would be equally adept at covering that space that he leaves, because that boy started his life as a centre-back and he's become a centre midfielder. So his first thought naturally is, what's the worst thing that can happen here? Well, he's advanced to me, so I need to cover his space. What we could see in a slightly different format and a slightly different shape is a chemistry developing in our midfield where we've got that cover, we've got that fluid midfield that's really difficult to get through that we had with the three that you know, formed all that success.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that there's been this debate, hasn't there, of right back or central midfield. Like, what about both at the same time? You know, as long as Bacetic could, that's a good point, actually. And I think, ironically, sometimes I think Trent's first, I can never say these two words, first thought is attacking. I always think, like, defenders need to have, like, a warning siren going off in the, which I don't think Alberto Moreno ever had, sometimes, which, like, there could be trouble here. I feel like Trent, his thing is, how can I hurt the opposition? Which is a brilliant thing to have. But as long as you've got someone there who can cover him. I think Lahm did this a bit under Guardiola and Kimmich has done it. But I think Trent has got the weapons that nobody else has in that. He's got the weapons of a Pirlo or a Beckham or a Gerrard, you know, in terms of the passing ability. So I'm really looking after screaming blue murder 20 minutes in against Arsenal, going, why are we trying this now? After that, I am really looking forward to seeing where this is going to go, and we're going to get some midfield reinforcements. I don't know how the chemistry is going to work, but that's, yeah. As long as we've got, Konate needs to stay fit, cover that right-hand side. I mean, Gomez, if he's fully confident, I'd maybe see doing that role.
Sam was right. But, just to interject, Sam was right. I think Gomez can play in those positions to cover because he is mobile.
That's what we need, really.
But it's confidence. You know, the moment he makes a mistake, he might as well bring him off because he gets inside his own head. And then they come and, like, botch loads of him, don't they? What I thought was interesting last night, to sort of come to a conclusion on the Trent piece and give him his credit because he's worth it, is when he picked up the ball, Leeds stood off him quite a lot. So he's controlling the game by the fact that what Leeds are doing is saying, this guy can kill us with his passing range. So what I'm going to do is, when Trent's on the ball, Garcia's obviously said when he picks up the ball, if they do that today, boys, that your man, do not allow those guys to be free because I don't want them found. That's going to be the next evolution of that role. How do we circumnavigate when people allow Trent to have the ball and then deep and try to shut down his options? I think that's the next thing for Liverpool to do. Mm. And that's where our recruitment in the summer comes in. If we get a McAllister amount, you know, I'm just speculating here, over the line, they're different players that can give you something different. And in Trent, you've got Sam, you've got someone who can find those players. Mm. Sort of the pass before the assist. The thing that the Bundesliga eulogised over Thiago for years, mate.
And the pack and stats, which is another thing that Keita was really good at. Yeah, I think movement is the answer to that question as well, which comes into what you say. One of the great things about Keita is he likes to drift left, which helps Robbo and also supports Robbo and helps the left winger because then they can invert and do what they do. I think having players who do that, it'll be really important. I think, do you know last night Trent had the second most touches in a game of football from an individual player this year? And bearing in mind how many of the lower teams, City have probably played at home and they've just give the ball to Rodri every 2 seconds. But it was 153 touches, I believe, the second most touches in the Premier League this season by an individual player. Amazing. I wouldn't be surprised if he beats that in a couple of the home games this season. I think he's a wonderful player. I'm really excited to see how this develops. I'm intrigued to see if Liverpool actually go big on a centre-half this year. So we've got two Canates, who knows? But I think I think what that does, and seeing this squad fully fit now with a little run, little something to go for, you know, come on, get back in this race, guys. I'm intrigued to see who stakes their claim, because I also believe that, well, as much as I think the summer business is kind of well underway, I think there's a couple of players who are on the fence with Klopp. Like, you might be looking at Fabinho, Thiago, Curtis, and thinking, you've got 9 games now to prove to me that you still be part of my next evolution of this team. So I think I'm really intrigued to see how Trent goes, how those little relationships build between him and the aforementioned, because I think that could be a big part of what when we actually get to pull on the trigger. You know, who knows? Maybe we do go back for Bellingham because Trent's that good that we do think we need one or two as opposed to two or three. You know, who knows?
Cheers to Steve, cheers to Sam, and cheers to Jamie for that one. Hope you enjoyed it. And yeah, thankfully, Liverpool actually won a game. Let's hope they can do it when playing Nottingham Forest on Saturday. Moving on then, next up, it is time for the Biased Football Podcast. It was Paul Machin, Chris Pajak, Steve Plunkett, and myself. We had a big old chat about what's going on around the Premier League. You know, the rise of Aston Villa, what's going on at Tottenham, what's going on at Chelsea, the relegation battle, and tons more, including this clip where we spoke about Arsenal. Are they, quote-unquote, bottling? What's going on with Mikel Arteta's team? We had a big old chat about the current league leaders and can they hold on to that position?
It was really interesting to see Arsenal almost totally wiped the floor with them, almost ready to walk away with it. Could have been a cricket score. Doesn't go that way. They get a bit overconfident, a bit complacent. And then, obviously, they do throw it away to draw 2-2. It reminded me, I made this point on Last Fan Standing this week, Chris, is that Arteta, the 2-0 up, he doesn't need to win 3-0 and he doesn't need to win 4-0. He should probably just go, all right, lads, we're fine here. But this is the problem of where they're at in their development. They haven't learned that gear yet. And Liverpool had to do it after 17-18. Klopp's all, I remember sitting down with him at the end of the season, he was like, goals win your games, defences win your titles. And that became their mission statement, was to get our defence sorted. I think Arsenal are kind of doing that 13-14 Liverpool thing where they're flying, they're running before they've actually learned, before they've gone through
the process. Game management comes with experience and age of players and their experience in the game and stuff, doesn't it? You saw most of the second half in that game, and you know, West Ham tramped them, they beat them in the trenches type of thing, didn't they? And they gave them a bloody nose and they wanted it more. Quite frankly, that's what it felt like to me anyway. And Arsenal got really nice football, the tactically brilliant and stuff like that, but they haven't had to learn the hard way how to manage a game yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now,
I disagree, though. I think the other way around. I think they should have went for 3-4-5. I think that's where they failed. Cause I don't that's the strength of their team, is they're attacking. Mm-hmm. This was easy. And not being ruthless.
That's neither or, is it? That's the problem, you're right.
I think they should have. You know, West Ham were there to be beat.
I think you need to
when
learn.
When you've got someone down, I think you need to learn
as a team how to manage a game. I think it's massively important. You can blow teams away all you want. Liverpool have blown teams away this season, but we don't manage games well. And we are where we are because we've not managed games at the start of games, the start of second halves, when we've been in the lead and all that type of stuff. So for them, yeah, you're right. Their attacking prowess is what makes them really good. But you've also got to rest those players, and he hasn't been resting those players because Jesus has been injured and stuff like that. So you've got to make changes, and you've got to learn how to... When you can't make all them changes, you've just got to go. Take five.
I think if you don't need to run here. But if you score the third, it's a balance, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You score the third, you stand on the front, and you kill. That's how you kill them. What is interesting is like when Jorginho scored that goal, remember it bounced off fucking Emi Martinez's head and went in, and he had the win against Bournemouth. Like, this is real title challenging form from Arsenal. Like, yeah, but that's the kind of thing you want in April. It's a bit early for that. Now they looked against West Ham. At 2-0, they didn't look like... I know they missed the pen, obviously, the Saka thing, but like, they didn't look like they were going to hurt West Ham. They looked like, and against us, they were hanging on. They didn't look like they had legs to go, and like, that might go to your point, Chris. It felt like they went to the break. They were already showing signs, but they were getting through it by big moments.
Yeah.
That when those moments stop, when that ball doesn't hit Emi Martinez on the head and go in, you draw 2-2 twice, you know what I mean?
It goes back to game experience. It's like the boxing analogy of stuff is that if you're trying to knock your opponent out, it's class. But there's going to reach a point in a fight where you're like, I'm as likely to get knocked out as he is.
You can be 8 rounds behind. Yeah. By the time you get anywhere near, you can be tired by the time you can't throw the knockout punch anymore.
Yeah, and so you're thinking, well, this is going the distance. I've just got to make sure I get to the final bell. Ian, and that's kind of thing where... State's going to be interested to see whether Arteta can manage that, because right now what's happened is they're trying to continue to be themselves, and that's now two goal leads they've thrown away in back to back games.
First time in history or something, a team has not won consecutive games.
Well, they're one of two front foot teams, and ironically, he learnt his trade from the manager of the other front foot team. You can level the same criticism at City when teams come at them physically and have like the wind in their sails and their tails are up and all those types of comments. They struggle with that. You can get it, City. You can overpower City and you can overpower Arsenal. We overpowered Arsenal. That second half performance at Anfield was blood and thunder, as well as a bit of technical ability and graft. But it was about we smell blood and we want it more. And you could say the same with West Ham. That's both Guardiola's Achilles heel and is going to prove to be Arsenal's Achilles heel. How you dig it, the trenches comment Chris made, how you dig in and stop those things from happening. Neither club can do it.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the... Whoever does it the best is going to win the title.
I know he did well against us, right? But the goalie's not that good. I keep saying it. Like, he's not that good. He made some... two excellent saves against Liverpool, and he's got that in his locker.
I think he's all right.
He's not a world class goalie, but he's not, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's why I think Arsenal should attack, because I don't think any of their defensive players or the goalkeeper are of a standard where you can invite teams onto.
Well, they are.
You know what I mean? I don't think they're not going to manage. Liverpool weren't great at managing games, and then they got Alisson and Virgil van Dijk, and all of a sudden they're better at managing games.
They're missing Saliba, and they're playing Rob Holden at centre half.
Yeah, and they haven't.
They've got Ramsdale in goal. He's just, and then again, you made it, but they're still playing Granit Xhaka every week, who is just, he's like Dejan Lovren of midfield. He's more than good enough to play, apart from games where you need to have a perfect mentality, and he doesn't have a perfect mentality, so he'll explode and he'll cost you in stupid moments. And that's what, again, they are a team that are well ahead of the curve, and that's to be commended and lauded, and it might be just enough for them to just, on pure electricity, get over the line. But I'm looking at it now, and looking at the, you know, first and foremost, looking at the league table, the gap's down to 4 points. City have got a game in hand and they've still got to play Arsenal. Yeah. And their games, in terms of what Arsenal have got coming up, they've got Southampton Friday night football at home. So lucky that that's gone that way, because they then play City, as you say, at the Etihad. If that City game was next, I would be... Arsenal are... This is like on the ropes, a bit punch drunk, because they've not kept the guard up. They've tried to go for the knockout blow and left themselves a little bit open. They might touch lucky here and just get themselves, stabilise themselves with a win against Southampton. But then they've got City away, they've got Chelsea at home, which is obviously 3 guaranteed points, Newcastle away, Brighton at home.
They're in danger, aren't they, Arsenal, at the moment? I can't remember what era Liverpool it was, but when we used to lose those leads all the time, and you get into that lead and you start thinking to yourself, fucking hell, need to be perfect now. Like, there's like two games on the bounce. Like, that point against us it wasn't 2 points dropped against us. It was a point gained against us in the end.
Yeah.
It was they should have been using that as the mentality was, We gained the point there. Fucking hell, we should have lost that game in the end. Not that we lost the two goals thing. But the West Ham one felt slightly different because it's compounded by the Liverpool one as well.
Yeah, I agree on that one. Inevitable talk of bottling and all that kind of stuff.
I think they're running out of steam. I don't think they're bottling it. I think they 13-14 Liverpool might be apt. I think they're probably a little bit better than that, if truth be told. But without the star power, Liverpool's 13-14 probably have more world class players in it. But do you just look knackered again? Do you look? Who's your game changer? Do you got to? I remember the boat. They bring Reece Nelson on. He scores that goal and all thing, and it's McKay-esque.
Yeah.
But like, there's no real game changer. Like, you're looking at your bench. City are going, right, there's Alvarez. Deal with him. You know, if you really need to or something like that. Arsenal haven't really got that yet because the 11. They lose Saliba, which was a big blow, and then all of a sudden Rob Holding's playing. That's a drop off in itself.
Huge.
They've got Saka and Martinelli, but then if they don't, I like Trossard.
They've kind of dovetailed quite well. Martinelli, Saka, Jesus, and Nketiah when he was needed earlier on in the season.
And Trossard's been alright for them.
Trossard's got a few assists and stuff as well. Yeah,
but at the back and in midfield in particular, you're looking and thinking, do you look tired? Do you have, who's your game changing sub? Who's going to come on and just win you? Get you over the line. And this one, like, you know, we had Divock, for example, look, just a couple of those. Mm-hmm. Can you get, or like when Liverpool were really flying last season, Jota comes on or Diaz comes on in Villarreal when you're up against them, and there's your game changer. It felt that too early with Arsenal. If they had just one more big hitter to throw on and just go and win them that game, and they didn't really have it. And like I say, going back to those other games, the Bournemouth and the Villa, maybe they were precursors. Because against those, they look shattered.
But they've also, let's not forget that when you're at the top, teams play you differently. Now, early on in the season, you're at the top of the table. Yeah, are Arsenal the real deal, or are they just gone a good run? You probably err on good run. Now there's more tape of what they're doing. They've seen more ways of teams that have done well against them. You know, Mourinho, how many times did Mourinho show the blueprint for us and how to make it difficult for us? Like, that's what they're finding. That's a difficult thing to get over when teams change the play.
Yeah, and I think this is what's going to make the end of the season most interesting, particularly in that top from the title and the top four race, is the teams that have been there and done it before, will they get themselves into a situation where that experience will count? And I said it before, and Villarreal was mentioned there. I remember me and Steve being in that game, and I remember saying to you at half-time, this is big, this, because they've got something to lose now. It was great decline. They got themselves in the game. Fantastic. The crowd are all behind it. But now it's like every time we put a shot across their bow, they're going to be shitting themselves because the game's not done. It's all well and good. If you score the goals in the last minute and win it, then that's fine. But with 45 minutes or whatever to play, and now Arsenal are going to be in that situation where they've got City hunting them down, and they are tired, and the minutes in so many of them legs. And you look at Manchester City and think, fucking Erling Haaland had the winter off, and they played what, two pre-season games, so that they could end load, you know, so they had something left in the tank
City,
by the end.
City rest
and Newcastle are the same as this as
City,
well.
City rest a Gundogan the other day.
And because of where City are and where they've been in the last 5 years, City are currently sitting in autopilot. We know how to do this. Arsenal are going through an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
And that is more tiring than playing games of football. Yeah. So they've been to the rinsed twice, the two alls are like two defeats to them. Yeah. That's how they're looking at
pen,
it.
Sorry, Kurt, they missed the pen, Bowen scores, and then Arsenal subs in that game. They brought on Jorginho, Trossard, Nelson, Vieira and Nketiah. The bench, the options weren't, there was no one else. City were playing, they'd rest the Gundogan. Now, City brought a couple of the young kids on, but they had the options of other players. I mean, Alvarez comes on, but Akanji comes on, who's been really good for them. And also the level of City starting 11's better. Mm-hmm. So that's unfortunate. Yeah. Arsenal are finding out City are a juggernaut. And this time of the season, and I'm going to say it now, this is where the financial doping irregularities come into play. When your team is shattered and you're on your arse and you look at your bench for...
They're changing two forwards as a midfielder every game.
What can you do?
Yep.
And with all just an Arsenal going, right, we need a goal. Eddie Nketiah again. You're on a wing and a prayer at that point, aren't you? Where, look at the subs Liverpool brought on yesterday. Thiago, Nunes, Firmino, Diaz.
Yeah, exactly.
Arsenal haven't got that at the minute.
And this is like, you know, you put short distance runners up against long distance runners, and at this point of the season, this point in a long race, you know, you can be the fastest one out the blocks to all you want, But now City are now, you know, it takes them a little while to warm up and find their stride, but they're just in cruising. Everything's going their way. And Arsenal, again, I really go, Jesus Christ, this hurts. My legs hurt, my back hurts, I'm tired here. I'm starting to misstep a little bit and I'm losing my stride. And there's just this relentless running machine coming up behind.
Psychologically, it's got to be easier to have someone in front of you to aim your targets at than to run looking over your shoulder all the time.
That being said, sorry, we've had this argument in the past, is that we'd always rather be the team ahead of City than the team chasing City.
Because of how good at it they are.
No, but to take your long distance thing, I think long distance running is just it. You better lose the guy with a fast finish. Before you get to the fucking end, though, because you know the City are on your shoulder. And if you haven't lost them by the fucking last lap, you're done.
Yeah.
You're done. And that's what it feels like with Manchester City now. But what I will say on Guardiola and the Arteta thing is there is a gulf in class between those two managers. And I think you might be starting to see that more towards the end of the season. You know, you've got 15 years of experience at the top, winning European Cups, Premier Leagues, all kinds of trophies in between. When Guardiola and Arteta last faced each other in the City Arsenal game, both teams went with the box midfield. Half time, I think I'm right in saying Arsenal went ahead in that game, aren't I? Half time, I think it was, or maybe it was at the end of the first half. Guardiola changed it to go 4-4-2, and they ended up winning in 3-1, was it in the end?
Bernardo Silva left back at first.
It was box midfield, Bernardo Silva in there, and he changed it and just went to a 4-4-2 and beat Arsenal.
That's a really good point.
That might be the fucking thing. Like, Arteta's got Guardiola's blueprint. But he ain't got the magic.
Yeah.
He ain't the guy who came up with this.
He hasn't got the stands of the player.
That is such a good point, because there's three or four managers in world football that can change a game on the fly while it's happening, and Arteta isn't one of them.
Yes. Also, there's a huge Erling Haaland thing on this as well. When you're looking behind you, it's a bit like swimming when Jaws is behind you. And, you know, dirt, and you feel it coming, and all of a sudden, here's a fella who's just equal Mo Salah.
Gone. No legs.
Yeah, Mo Salah's record has just been equal with 8 games to go. And I maintain City 1-10 aren't as good as the cities we were playing against, but they've got the fella up front who just fucking is the best finisher I've ever seen. He's an absolute freak of nature, and that's terrifying. Arsenal, I spoke to a couple of Arsenal fans last week, actually. Yesterday. And they were like, how did you do this?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, it's hard. It's exhausting. It's mentally exhausting, the pressure on you, because you know they're going to win. Yeah. You just know they're going to win.
Absolutely. And they've not been there before, have they? And we know it. We recognise it. We've lived it. It's horrible.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cheers to Paul and everyone else, including me, for that one. I'm sure you enjoyed that bit of a conversation. Right, next up, it's another show featuring me. It is JNO Inside Time. I had Neil Jones from goal.com in the studio to talk about all the latest news around Liverpool Football Club, mainly transfer stuff, as we head towards the summer, which is hopefully going to be a very busy one for Liverpool. The latest name on the lips of everybody is Bayern Munich's Ryan Gravenberch. And yeah, Neil wrote about him on Wednesday. I had Neil in on Wednesday. Worked out to perfection. So yeah, what's going on with Ryan Gravenberch? What's going on with Liverpool's interest in him? Best way to find out is to ask Neil Jones. So I did exactly that. Let's move on to the transfers you wrote this morning, which was Andy, about Ryan Gladbert as well. For those who don't know, over the weekend, Jonathan Northcroft reported in the Sunday Times that Liverpool had met with Gravenberg's father, who's also called Ryan, just for clarity, in Amsterdam to discuss a potential deal, and the player was receptive to a move from Merseyside. You wrote that in your piece today, so head over to Gold as well to check it out. I'll bring it up here now on the screen for those who are watching along. So your story on the back of it, Liverpool's Jude Bellingham alternative, question mark. By Munich, Brian Gravenberg could be part of Jürgen Klopp's midfield solution. He's one of the summer targets, and you want, you know, about, he has already met with Liverpool. I think the major talking points around this one, Neil, really, is, hey, it looks like Liverpool are interested, but maybe Bayern don't want to sell. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's where the sort of the balance is. I mean, a year ago, this would have been this. I think the Twitter world probably would have been in absolute sort of excitement at Liverpool. You know, he was a real hot prospect, wasn't he, coming through at Ajax? Liverpool had come up against them in the Champions League. I do remember him sort of being really classy and impressive, especially over in Amsterdam. I know it was the pandemic season, and it was sort of a little bit of a forgettable year, really. But I do remember him. They had a few players that, you know, kudos, went off injured in the game early, but there was a lot of talk about him. There was a lot of talk about Gravenberg. I think Timber possibly played as well, and you know there was sort of this exciting young Ajax team with Erik ten Hag, and he did stand out. He went to Bayern Munich, and I think a lot of people looked at that and thought, oh, they've got a good one there, good price. I think it was €18 million with some add-ons, but he hasn't worked out. He just hasn't been able to get in the team, has he? And it's sort of one of those, well, what do you give more weight to? The Ajax talent or the Bayern Munich failure? And Liverpool have had some success with not worrying about the failure part. You know, Mo Salah at Chelsea, or you know, Gini Wijnaldum being relegated, Andy Robertson being relegated. You know, doubts over maybe Sadio Mane and things like that. They've been able to sort of say, well, no, but the actual player is he's that and he's got this, and if we get him in this system, he can do that. So I think they definitely see a potential opportunity. I think the player clearly has some concerns over whether he's going to play. He's only started one Bundesliga game this season. He hasn't started a game at all, I think, since November the 1st, which was in the Champions League, and that was a dead rubber. And then Bayern Munich are going to sign Konrad Leimer, which obviously we've talked about quite a while on this show. I think it was last summer we were talking about that happening. It doesn't point to it to sort of, Your time is coming, does it? You know, it doesn't point to the idea of, right, we're gonna start trusting you. It points to it's gonna get even harder from here to get into the side. So I think he's seeing that, the wind blowing that direction. But Bayern got a good deal. Bayern got him for much less than I think the market value probably was, or logic dictates that it was. Why would they sell him sort of so cheap again after only 1 year? He's only 20, he's 21 next month. He, you know, he's got potential. I think maybe they might see, well, no, why would we give away an asset at this point? They're not soft, Bayern Munich. They don't do silly things in the transfer market very often. So I think that's the big decision, really. I think the player would quite like to leave, or would be open to leave, and I think Liverpool would certainly be open to signing him, especially if the price was decent. But I think it all rests on really on Bayern Munich. And I've seen some reports in Germany already, that quite firm reports saying he's not for sale. We'll see if that changes, but that's the sort of the inkling you're getting from Liverpool is Bayern might not sell him.
But Liverpool, obviously, I think it's been pretty well established. There's been a conversation with his agent or his dad, or both.
Yeah,
same
both.
Fella. Same fella. Would that happen if he was just...
I don't think it's just Liverpool. I think that's... His agent is obviously...
Trying to get him out.
Rafael Pimenta, who's Mino Raiola took over from. She took over from Mino Raiola. So there's a history of the agent will always meet with clubs, and there'll be probably a lot of players on the sort of agenda. But I don't think it's sort of meeting with Ryan Gravenberch's dad to sort of say, right, this is the house he's going to live in. This is, you know, I think it's a little bit more sort of.
Does he fancy a move?
Generally, what's the situation? You know, how's he feel? What's he thinking? You know, okay, what do you think it would take to you know, for buying to sell? Or, you know, I mean, it could come down to, is he willing to sort of make it awkward for buying and sort of put it on their toes and say, well, I want out. I want to, you know, potentially. So, and I think there's other clubs as well. Obviously, Arsenal, I think, are looking for midfielders. And I think, of course, Manchester United looking for midfielders. I'm pretty sure, you know, if Chelsea get wind that there's a transfer going on anywhere in the world, I think there he is, prick up, and they'll have a bit of that. So there's a few other clubs as well that will be in the mix. I think the thing to say about it is he's potentially a very good player available for potentially a pretty good price. And that would certainly have to be, you know, interest Liverpool in that sense. And we'll see. You know, I haven't been told that this sort of it's close, or he's the one, or he's the button's been pushed on this one, and that's the one. But I think he's definitely one of them who's in the frame, and I'm one to keep an eye on for sure.
I suppose from a Liverpool fan's point of view, those who want us to sign the player, of course. The encouraging one is, and it's been in your report and a few others as well, it's like the player's receptive to the move.
Yeah.
Liverpool haven't gone to speak to his agent, he's got no chance of not signing.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It looks like if he could get something done with buying, he'd be up for it, essentially.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, you know, there's other angles, isn't there? There's obviously the Gakpo signed, Van Dijk's there, so he's got a little Dutch core, Pep Linders, of course, as well. So, you know, I'd be amazed if there haven't been some sort of, you know, discussions there, or at least a little bit of a character reference from those players about what he's like and that kind of thing. But he's not playing football, is he? He's 20 years of age. He's played close to 100 games. I think he played for Ajax. He's played at the World Cup. He's been part of the Netherlands World Cup squad. He's an international player. He's played in the Champions League, and now he's playing. You know, he's played 20-odd games, I think, for Bayern this season, but four starts. That's not where he thought he was going to be, is it? Not where he wants to be at 2021. I think he wants to be developing into a player that's, you know, being talked about. Maybe not like a Jude Bellingham, but not far off that kind of reputation. He certainly had the build-up as a teenager and as a young player coming through Ajax. He was compared with all kinds, you know, Frank Rijkaard and Paul Pogba and, you know, these kind of players that absolute sort of top level players. That's where he wanted to get to, isn't it? And at the moment, he's not getting there at Bayern Munich. So, yeah, he would be looking and saying, well, what's out there for me? You know, is there a club? Is there a manager? Is there a team that can get me back on the you know, the upward trajectory, if you like? And, you know, Liverpool are a pretty good example of that, aren't they? Liverpool have done it for some players. You know, there were players, you know, who weren't obvious signings, like I mentioned a few obviously earlier, but even sort of Diogo Jota, you know, you're looking at potentially Cody Gakpo might be one of those, Luis Diaz. They weren't players that you said, oh God, like that was always going to work out perfectly for Liverpool, wasn't it? You know, Gini Wijnaldum. Like, Liverpool have got a good track record of, if you get in our team and we can build the team around you that can make you look really, really good and get you back playing at, you know, the highest level. Obviously, it would really, really help them, I think, if they were doing it from a Champions League point of view and they were getting in there. We haven't even talked about that race. Maybe we'll have a look after the Forest and the West Ham games at that one. But that they are still an attractive proposition for a player who maybe has, I wouldn't say come off the rails, but it has sort of had the difficult bump in the road. You know, Mason. Wow.
The studio's falling apart.
Wow. A sign saying boss has just fell down. Yeah. Okay.
That could be an omen.
Yeah, absolutely. But so Mason Mount, we talk about Mason Mount in a similar situation, don't we? Sort of had a difficult season. Can he kind of change his scenery, change his sort of trajectory of his career? I think Gravenberch is even more sort of in that category because he's played so little football in the last 12 months. So I think if Liverpool could get, you know, a deal with Bayern, I think, of course, I think he'd jump at it, to be perfectly honest.
A couple of things then before we move on from him, just to, again, Why do you think that's what I know Bayern, like, for example, who's in front of him already? So you're
Joshua Kimmich, Leon Goretzka, and Musiala.
And then sometimes Thomas Muller's played in the midfield. They've used Alphonso Davies in the midfield. So you've got great players, I get it. But Nagelsmann signed him, Bayern signed him, and never picked him.
Yeah.
He's gone, there's a new manager, and it's early days on Thomas Tuchel, and apparently he's a fan, and he's been talking him up a little bit as now. But it's whether they've decided he's just not that good, or he just needed a year, like Liverpool have done this with players. Not so long, but, like, you know, Fabinho wasn't in Liverpool's team straight away, and then he became it. Like, what is there any sense of what Bayern are doing? Do they not rate him, or is it a case of, like, he just needs to work on it? Because he hasn't played.
No, but it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's a few in that camp. I mean, there's a very obvious one in Sadio Mane at the moment who's Champions. Signed in the summer, you know, just hasn't been able to do it. João Cancelo signed in January, and sort of they haven't yet found a way of getting him into the team. Have they? You know, they actually signed another guy from Ajax at the same time, Mazraoui, fullback, who I think he's played even less than Gravenberch, or certainly not much. I don't know whether it's maybe it's just a difficult system to get under, you know, at Bayern. You know, they've had a lot of those players that you mentioned there. I mean, Kimmich, Goretzka, Thomas Muller, Alphonso Davies, you know, obviously, you know, Gnabry and Coman, they've been there a long time, haven't they? And they're sort of very well established. And maybe it is difficult to just sort of get a new player right into that team straight away. Obviously, I mean, they're good players as well. The ones that are keeping them out, they're not mugs. You know, Kimmich is one of the best around. Goretzka's obviously been a big player for Bayern. Musiala's one of the elite talents, you know, of world football, isn't he, for a young player? So he's not sitting there twiddling his thumbs while they're sort of playing people you've never heard of in there. He is having to wait. Maybe there's things on the player's side that he hasn't maybe done enough. I saw Tuchel sort of saying that he trains really well, and that he's showing up in training, and that he is a candidate now to play, which, you know, maybe works. Sometimes managers just don't fancy players, do they? Maybe Nagelsmann just didn't. He just wasn't what he thought he was. You know, we've seen, haven't we? We've seen players where you just think, he's brilliant, why is he not playing? And the manager, like, he won't do the work off the ball, or he doesn't get enough goals, or he doesn't track, you know, there's a reason for it. He doesn't link up well enough with the left back, or, you know, that kind of thing. So there will be factors behind it, but I think it's how, I suppose, it clearly hasn't put Liverpool off, as it isn't an idea that, oh my God, he's like, he's the worst professional we've ever sort of had in Munich. You know, he just doesn't try, or, you know, that sort of stuff would put a club off, wouldn't it? It clearly hasn't. So it must just be a little bit of circumstance. It may be a little bit of sort of bad luck, maybe a little bit of a personality clash with a manager, or you know, not even necessarily a personality clash, just a style sort of not gelling. But it might be interesting to see whether Bayern, you know, obviously, they're probably going to go up to Champions League tonight, aren't they? So they've got a title running to focus on. See how much he features in the sort of in the running, because they've got some. They're not playing incredibly well. They drew last weekend. They're obviously at the level on points at the top of the Bundesliga. Or they're not. They're certainly not home and dry in the Bundesliga.
They're 2 points clear.
They would have been. I think they would have been level on points if Dortmund hadn't thrown away a lead at the weekend. So it'll be interesting to see whether they trust him in that running period, or whether he remains in this sort of position of getting 10 minutes, 15 minutes here and there, or not even coming on in games, and how that maybe influences his decision and the club's decision come the end of the season.
The final one, then, mate, just to wrap it up, is you talk about the players who are in front of him, and I'm thinking about the players who are in front of him. I can see why you might be looking at it, because they're all, take Thomas Muller aside, who's getting on a bit, they're all of an age where no one's moving anytime soon. They're not losing Goretzka. They're not losing
Kimmich.
They're not getting rid of any of the others. And also, you mentioned before, they're signing Conor Lyman as well. So, like, at some point, Bayern must be thinking of letting one of them go. I know Thomas Muller, again, the age thing, but he'll probably just retire there at some point and do something by Munich at some point. But he's only 33. He's not going anytime soon. The fact that they've already agreed this Lyman deal, surely the numbers game suggests that they're going to let somebody leave, you would think.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, there's obviously stories linking other players away, Sadio Mane being obviously one at the moment. So I don't think they're in a financial situation where Bayern are going to have to.
Numbers, rather,
yeah, possibly. Maybe they feel that had they had an extra midfielder this season, they would have, you know, been competing with City in the Champions League better, or home and dry in the Bundesliga. But yeah, I think it definitely raises a question. If you haven't played when there's four midfielders at the club and now there's five, you know, of course it's gonna play on your mind, or it's gonna come into someone's thinking. But like I say, I mean, he is a 20-year-old player, and Bayern maybe would be the point they would make. Is like, well, you know, we didn't sign him for an old Klopp quote. We didn't sign him for 5 minutes. We signed him for 5 years. You know, yeah. He's got time to develop into the player that we need him to be. But yeah, from his point of view, I can definitely see why he would look and think and go, like, where are my minutes coming here? You know, do I want to play in the German Cup, and, you know, as I say, wait for maybe a dead rubber Champions League game, or, you know, like I say, off the bench 10, 15 minutes. Do I want to do that for another year? You know, I'm losing out, you know, especially as some of his other players. I mean, Ajax sold a lot of players last summer, didn't he? And, you know, think of Antony, you know, getting good game time at Manchester United, obviously Lisandro Martinez before he got his injury as well. You know, he's probably looking at a few of them and thinking, well, hang on, like, you know, they've gone to big clubs and sort of found a place in the team. Why haven't I?
Yeah, I suppose. Right. He also left a bit to go, didn't he? And even then, he still haven't played. So it's an interest on, really, of how it's going to
play. Yeah, so
they've let him go out on loan, and Granby still hasn't played. So I can see why his agent's on the phone to teams at this point.
Yeah.
We'll put a pin in that one and see how much it have come to the
Yeah, definitely wants to watch. I think he's going to be a name that's going to come up a lot in the next, you know, couple of months.
Do you feel like it could be one of those, Charlie? I feel like you might have to kick up a fuss. You know, like, I'm not saying, like, go and boot balls around in training and be that disruptive, but, like, if you want to go and they're not selling you and you're not playing, like, at some point it is on the player to try and get out, isn't it? It's not the nice side of footy to say that, but, like, we kind of half suspected this with Van Dijk at Southampton when he made that move happen, essentially, in the end. It does feel like maybe that needs to be the case. Where I don't know how that will go down at Bayern Munich, whether you just go, fuck, like, not happening. Brighton held out on Casado when he was in the similar boat, so there's no guarantee it happens, but it feels like maybe, I don't know, would he do that to Bayern? I don't know that as character.
Yeah,
but it feels like it might be something like that, I don't know.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, he's spoken out. There's been a few times he's spoken out this season. I wouldn't say, sounds a bit more dramatic than it is, but he's spoken and said he's disappointed that he's not been playing, that he's given interviews saying it hasn't worked out the way I hoped it has yet, or, you know, that kind of thing. So, of course, there's, you know, international breaks coming up, and you get those players, maybe you give these explosive interviews or the quotes seem explosive, where he says, you know, yeah, I want to play or I want to leave. You know, I think that is a possibility. But like you say, I don't know how. I think Bayern have seen a few players do that kind of thing, and I don't think they're the one who will go, oh God, we better give him what he wants. You know, I think Bayern are a strong enough club and in a strong enough position that, you know, If they were set on something, I think they would be capable of sticking to it.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, right then, we'll put a pin in that one. I'm sure we'll be talking about Gravenberch again in the future. Thanks to Neil for that one. Hopefully you've enjoyed Journey Win Tags. It's my favourite show. I absolutely love doing it. Hopefully you guys enjoy it too. Right then, if you want even more Ryan Gravenberch chat in your life, we've spoke to a Liverpool-based journalist. Who else should we speak to? I know, a German-based one. So yeah, Toby Eichscheffel of Sport Bild. He was actually the person who, I think, broke the story in Germany in the first place, what Liverpool's reported interest in the Dutchman. So yeah, he was this week's guest on Transfer Insight with Dan Club.
You did a report last week about Liverpool holding a meeting with the players' representatives about possibly signing him. And within that report, you said that Jurgen Klopp has kept a close eye on his development, following his move from Ajax to Bayern Munich, of course. I wanted to speak to you first and foremost, Toby, about how the player's done since he made that move, because it hasn't really worked for him, has it? Why do you think that is?
Well, he didn't get enough playtime. He's very angry about this. He's not a patient guy. So I think he's very talented, a good player. But when he came to Bayern, he thought like he would be the rising star, or he would get much more chances from Julian Nagelsmann, who wanted him, and also Hasan Salihamidžić, sporting director of the club. He wanted him very badly from Ajax. When he came, he didn't get too much playtime. And like after the first 4 or 5 matches he didn't play, he was going very angry out of the stadium. He was showing that he was not happy with the situation. And we all know that he wants to play more, and we all know that he's a big talent. So we don't really know why he doesn't get much more play time. And it's for me, it's clear. I can understand why other clubs are interested in Klavenberg, because he's like a good box-to-box player. He's young. He's very strong. He can be a player for Premier League when you look at his body. Mm-hmm. And he wants to know from Bayern, will my situation change in the next season or not? Because if it's not changing, then he wants to leave. But Bayern, especially Salihamidzic and Marco Neppe, the technical director, they want to give him after 1 year to another club because they think he can make it at Bayern. He just needs the self-confidence and a coach who trusts in him.
Yeah, 100%. And you mentioned the coach there. Obviously, that coach has changed recently. Thomas Tuchel's now the manager at Bayern Munich. And I wonder whether he might fancy Gravenberch a little bit more, because like you say, he hasn't played enough football. He's only 20 years old. He's a very exciting talent. And you mentioned some of his qualities there in terms of his box-to-box, his physical presence, his height, his ability on the ball. And Raphael van der Vaart, I actually seen just before speaking to you this morning, has commented saying that Gravenberch is better than Bellingham in every way. Whether he's been a little bit biased because he's also Dutch there, I'm not quite sure. But he's made 27 times this season since making the move to Bayern. He's got 1 goal and 1 assist in that time, but he hasn't played 90 minutes at all in the Bundesliga, which is probably the most damning stat, I suppose, in many senses. On his quality, you mentioned some of the things there. What do you think his best attributes are? And also, do you think there's maybe a chance Thomas Tuchel might use him a little bit more between now and the end of the season?
Well, you got to look at the situation in which Tuchel came into Bayern, and that's not the time to like give a young player playing time, because he had pressure from the first moment. He had the match against Borussia Dortmund, which was for the whole club very, very important.
Yeah.
And then you had the Champions League against City, all those important matches. You don't use that kind of matches to give a player like playing time. Mm-hmm. That was the problem. So I think that Tuchel is a coach who sees his abilities, Gravenberch's. I don't think that he's better than Bellingham, although I don't like Bellingham's attitude on the pitch too much, because he's always like having discussions with his teammates, with the referee, with the fans, with his opponents. But Gravenberch, I mean, I can't tell you too much about him, how he would play or how he would develop, because it's a pity I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I mean, he played a little bit more than 700 minutes since his arrival at Bayern Munich. So what I see and what I've seen in videos, I know that there is a big potential, but hopefully we will see this potential. I mean, if you look at Sabitzer, I think he's doing a good job at Man United, but that's because he gets the chance, also because Eriksen is injured or was injured, to play a lot of matches. I was visiting him, Sabitzer, some days ago in Manchester. And his problem at Bayern was, he told me, I never got the chance to play 4, 5, 6 games in a row on my position. And that's the problem with Gravenberch.
Yeah,
well, this experience, then it will be a lot different, and you can see what he's able to do.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that the lack of opportunities that Gravenberch has had has obviously hindered him. He probably didn't expect it to be this way either. I think he went to Bayern thinking he was going to be a big major part and starting a lot of games, and it hasn't really worked out for various reasons. Bayern Munich being a very good football team being one of the reasons, of course. I suppose the biggest question, Toby, is you mentioned earlier on that the sporting director and perhaps Bayern Munich as a club don't want to sell him yet, because you have only had him for 12 months. I think he cost 18 million euros there or thereabouts. It's like 16 million pounds. So there's probably a profit to be made if you were to sell him this summer, if you were Bayern Munich. But do you think if Gravenberch turns around at the end of the season and says, I want to go, I need to play more football, do you think Bayern Munich would be open to that sale?
At the moment, I think only if Tuchel says to Salihamidzic, I don't need him for the next season, and you can sell him, because then, I mean, there's a lot of trouble for Hasan Salihamidžić at the moment, but what he has done exceptionally was like selling players. He is doing a good job in that. And if he would sell now Gravenberg, although he played only 700 minutes, I think Liverpool would have to pay much more than the £16 million Bayern paid Ajax. So that would be a chance for Bayern to gain money. Mm-hmm. But I think Salihamidžić is determined to keep Gravenberg because it was like one of his players, one of the players he and Marco Neppe were like having an eye on for a long time.
Yeah.
And to lose Gravenberg right now or after the season would be like a personal defeat for Salihamidžić and Marco Neppe.
Cheers to Dan and cheers to Toby for that one. Moving on then, the last clip I want to bring you this week, it is from the deep dive. Yes, Chris Pajak and Josh Williams. That show is proven to be very, very popular. We put a free version out on YouTube each and every Friday evening, and then a second one on Red Men Plus for our amazing subscribers as well. So if you do subscribe to Red Men Plus, you get double dips. You get two of these amazing shows. Here is a clip from this week's Red Men Plus version of the deep dive.
We were going to talk about which sections to do each person, but we've forgotten to do it, so we're just going to do it on the fly, okay? We've not spoken about it at all. We were gonna break it up and do a section each, but it is what it is. Josh, we're here to talk about why Liverpool need European football next season, and I think you know there's a lot of talk about, well, I wouldn't want it because we can have a run at the league and all that type of stuff. I mean, what's your overall feeling before we get into the numbers of whether Liverpool do need European football or not? What's the fan in you say, first of all?
I think obviously one Champions League, that's a given. I think I would also take Europa League if you give me it, but I would almost certainly drop the Conference League, and that's even based on what we're going to put forward here.
Right.
Because I think, although you get money for it and things like that, I think...
When do they play it? Friday lunchtime?
it's the same as the Europa League, I think, in terms of that, but you're playing like... Who are you playing with? You're playing the most random sides in the world. Like,
you say that, but we played TNS in the Champions League qualifier. Top yeah, network solutions from Wales, like, you know what I mean?
I know.
The one thing that I will say for the Conference League that has got going for it is you're going to get some random aways. If you go to in Europe, the random ones are fucking boss.
Yeah.
Like, as much as everyone loves going to Porto because you get a whopping by a few goals every single time, it's nice to go and see different places.
Yeah.
And, like, I've been to Porto twice to see us away. But I went to Red Star, and Red Star's well more like memorable in that regard because it's just mad by comparison. So for all those like PSGs and the Bayern Munichs and the Barca's and the Madrids that I've been to, the random ones are good as well. Like, and to go to some different cities and mad Eastern European places would be pretty cool for an away fan.
Yeah, no, I'm in favour of the tournament. Like, I think if you're someone like a Brighton or a West Ham or something like that, I think it's a sound competition for you and that. But I think from a Liverpool perspective, I think.
He's looking down his nose there,
fighting
any.
Like,
what he should be doing is looking up at him.
I know, right now at least, yeah. Can we have some of your players, please? but I think we would benefit more in terms of getting back into the Champions League, which we're going to show us where the money's at, by skipping that for a year, rather than competing in that and getting however many million, I'm sure you're going to get into it now, and then potentially next season only getting the Europa or something like that. See what I mean?
No, I see what you mean, right?
What about you?
I think from a fan's perspective, I probably agree with Europa and the Champions League where it's at.
Mm.
I think a lot of people would just sack the Europa League off, but like, the thing is, like everyone says that, but like the first six games of the Champions League are pretty shit. Like the first, I don't know how many it is, 96 games of the Europa League is shit before you get to the quarters or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Once you get at the quarters stage in the Europa League is sound.
Yeah.
Absolutely fine. It's good fun, like.
Yeah.
And it's got the best trophy.
It has, yeah.
Second
and
best.
And we haven't won it under Klopp.
Yeah.
That's the one thing we haven't won.
And he's entered. There you go. And he has entered it already. Mm. I was at that final. it wasn't great. So we're going to look at the Champions League revenue first and foremost for the 21-22 season. We've beaten finalists in that one, of course. It's the most up-to-date financial information. Swiss Ramble, where I've collated all this from. He's actually collated the information. I've just read his emails and his blog. He's collated all the information. So you know it's right. It's not just me doing it. There'll be a random wrong figure in there somewhere. Unless I've typed it down wrong, in which case, sorry, everybody, you're fucked. And then we're going to look at the Europa League revenue for 21-22. We're going to look at Liverpool's revenue for 21-22. So, to start us off, 2.7 billion is distributed from UEFA to all the clubs in all of their three competitions. 74% of that 2.7 billion goes to Champions League clubs, 17% goes to Europa League clubs, 9% goes to conference clubs. So that's 2 billion goes to Champions League clubs, 465 million goes to Europa League clubs, 235 million go to Europa conference clubs. See, that is a massive, massive...
You can probably underline that, to be honest. That's like a massive statement, is to say, like, the Champions League is where it's at. That's where you need to be. That's why Arsenal, for example, the past couple of seasons, despite being out of it, have thrown so much money in the in their transfer markets at getting back in it. Because for 2 billion of 2.7 billion to go towards Champions League clubs and the rest goes towards the...
Two other competitions with about a bazillion teams in, by the way.
Yeah, it's crazy.
There's got to be more teams in Europa League than the Champions League.
Yeah, I suspect that there is, yeah.
And the conference, I've got no idea how the conference works.
No,
I've got no idea. Just I didn't think I'd ever need to know, to be quite honest with you.
I should know, to be fair, but I don't.
Right, let's go through it. On performance in the Champions League, and that is the games that you play, you can win a maximum of £85.1 million. In the Europa League, you can win a maximum of £23.4 million. And in the Conference League, £15.5 million. So this is where one of my points stands, Josh, is there's actually not that much difference in money between the Conference and the Europa League.
Yeah.
But there's a huge difference between the Champions League and the Europa.
Yeah.
So if you can win 85 in the Champions League, 23 in the Europa, 15 in the Conference, it's actually not a bad thing to get that conference, because money wise,
yeah,
on what you get for the games that you play, there's actually only 8 million quid in it, whereas there's 62 million quid between the Europa League and the Champions League,
yeah,
which is mad. So, and how you get that, you get 2.8 million for a win, you get 9.6 million for winning in the last 16, you get 10.6 million for winning in the quarters, 12.5 for the semi, 15.5 million for being a finalist, the beaten finalist, and 20 million for the winners. So Liverpool got all bar 4.5 million of that 85.1 million that season, because we won all six of our group games. If you don't win and you get a draw, you get 0.9. If you lose, you don't get any money for it.
Well, I found that a little bit surprising, the group stage money that you're awarded if you just win your games. Liverpool obviously won all of their games, as you say, and I think that accumulated a total of about, I think it was like 18, 20 million.
16.8
like
million it was.
Was it, yeah. Yeah, just for winning your group games against, like, I mean, I think we had a quite a tough group, actually, off the top of my head. Did we have, like, Milan on there?
Yeah, we had Milan in there. Oh, God. Josh, why? Why bring it up? I remember Origi playing and Phillips playing against Milan. That's about all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of the point. Well, think about it from a competitions point of view. Think about it if you're UEFA. Do you want teams sliding through on minimal effort? If you incentivise them going out and win, you get the better competition, don't you? Or the best players playing in it, and that's what they want. What they don't want, and what Liverpool do, to be fair, in the Champions League, is they rotate in the Champions League because they're thinking about the league. A 90-odd point season with Manchester City where you can't lose. Whereas we did play Origi and Nat Phillips in the San Siro because we think we're better than AC Milan. But if you put so much money on a win, then it does beg the question of, actually, is it worth me? Because if we win this game, I might just start Salah, because we get 2.8 million quid for it.
Yeah.
Because you can go through on like 10, 12 points, can't you? But Liverpool won every single game and got, what, 16.8?
Yeah, well, I was going to say then, I think there's been games in the past, I remember, where we've been qualified and we've maybe had a big game on the weekend and people have been calling for, like, you know, the kit man to start.
It was when Jota got injured in the sixth game.
Yeah,
a couple of years back.
Yeah, I think Klopp gets slated for things like that. But when you put it into perspective and think about it, it's around, like, what is it, 2 million for a group game win?
2.8.
Yeah, well, that's a fair bit for pay a win just for winning one match against some, like,
farmers.
European minnows, really, sometimes.
So there you go. The other part of it is the UEFA coefficient plays a huge part in Champions League, and this is where it's really bad for you if you miss out on European football, Josh. In 2021, we ranked 13th in our UEFA coefficient. It's based on the last 10 seasons, and we got 22.7 million just based on the coefficient. Now, On what we're looking at, Chelsea were fourth with 33 million based on UEFA coefficient. That's because they won the Champions League in 2012 and they won the Champions League under Tuchel. So they got two wins in there.
And they won the Europa League somewhere.
And they won the Europa League as well. Yeah. Now that Champions League will drop off this next coming season.
Okay.
Because it's over 10 years and their coefficient will go down.
Yeah.
But why we're not so high is considering we've won one, been to two finals, we had years where we were out of the Champions League, not building any coefficients up. If we lose European football again for a season, that won't harm us just for next season not being in Europe, the money. That'll harm the money we can potentially win in the Champions League for 9 years following.
Yeah. I mean,
is mental.
Yeah, it is, yeah. But I mean, one of the things I was really surprised about, though, I still didn't think we'd be that low. Like, we're beneath Man United there.
Yeah.
By a fair bit. And over the past 10 years, you're talking like around the time Ferguson left, maybe, in terms of a 10-year period. It doesn't feel like United have been better than Liverpool in Europe over that period. Liverpool, as you say, have won the Champions League, been to three or four finals in terms of, like, Champions League and Europa League.
Missing out harms you.
Yeah,
because you don't get any points.
Yeah,
and when it's only a 10-year spell and whatever the points are that you get, if you've got 1 year with zero, that fucks you up.
Yeah, well, we did, didn't we? I think Klopp's first year was we completely out of it.
Yeah.
All the tournaments, was we?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
He came in and we went to the Europa League final that year, didn't we, actually?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in Klopp's first season, where did we finish? Was it eighth?
Yeah.
Eighth, yeah.
So the following season we had nothing?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was something in there like that. But it does hurt you, yeah.
So there's that. There was probably 2012-13 when we weren't in European football. There's potentially 11-12, you know, European football in this as well.
13-14 when we finished second with Rodgers, yeah. We didn't have any.
Cheers to Josh and cheers to Chris for that one. They are the absolute best in the business. What an awesome duo we've got. They are really, really flourishing in that show. I absolutely love it. I'm sure you guys do too. Like I said at the start of the show, if you want to go back and watch those shows or indeed listen to them all in podcast form on the very same app probably that you're listening to this to right now, head on over to redmenplus.com, sign up as a club captain on a yearly subscription, and yet you'll be able to use that code weekly and get yourself a discount if it's not for you and maybe you just want to try it for one off. Well, if you go over there, you can sign up for a month as well, and if you don't like the sound, don't have to commit to the whole year, you can just give it a little whirl and I'm sure you'll like it. And if you're listening to this on Spotify, if you search for Red Men Plus podcast on your Spotify app, you can directly sign up to Red Men Plus through there as well. You pay Spotify, you don't pay us, and you'll get it in your podcast feeds as well. So there's two ways to get all this amazing content. I hope you do go and check it out. We've had loads and loads of people join us in the last week. It's been really, really nice to see that the content's getting well received. So go and get yourselves involved. Join us. Go and listen to all those shows that you've just heard clips from and the entire back catalogue and everything that's to come as well, including the post-game stuff around Liverpool versus Nottingham Forest this weekend. That's enough from me. I'll let you all get on with your day. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening to all that, and I'll see you next week. See you in a bit.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.